Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Tonight we're continuing in our series looking at the I Am sayings of Jesus. And so tonight we're looking at I Am the Gate. I don't know whether you ever realize this, but as we go about our daily lives, we're surrounded by gates. For example, you're going into work, and if you work at the hospital, you've got to either swipe your little card or put money in or put a ticket in or press a button and the gate opens and you can go into the car park. And if you're visiting the hospital, you can be there for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes trying to get in. And then when it gets to your point, you find out that it's full, so you can't enter. Or, for example, if you're going on holiday, you've got to go and you're going on to the airport, you've got to go and find the right plane at the right gate. But before you can get to that gate, you've got to go through a security gate. And before that, you've got to leave your luggage at the check-in desk. And there's a whole series of gates that you've got to go through. If you've ever been to court, there's a little security gate that you've got to go through there. I wasn't actually in court recently, just to make you feel at ease. But I actually ended up going to sit with someone who was going to go into court. And you suddenly find that you've got to empty literally everything out of your pockets and out of any bag or anything else, put it in a tray, and then walk through, and you get this man with a bar zipping it all over and it beeps and you're trying to find what's metal in you and all that. Or if you've watched any of the Winter Olympics, some of the sports that happen, some of the downhill skiing or the snowboarding, they have to pass through gates in the correct sequence, whereas if they miss it, they're disqualified. Or if they miss certain gates, they get a time penalty, and it can cost them dearly. It can cost them all the preparation and everything they've been doing for years. The picture up there, I don't know if you can't really quite see it, it's a great picture where the skiers managed to somehow get through the gate with part of the gate still attached to their ski. And I haven't worked out whether they actually made it to the bottom or not. I'm still looking for that one. Or you may have a gate at home that actually keeps what you have secure if you remember to lock it. Or it means that it takes you into another part of your garden or somewhere else. Or if you're a science fiction fan, a bit like me, there are stargates. That if you pass through a stargate, you get to the other side of the galaxy like that. Now, I wish they existed, because that would be amazing. So where we're at in context of Jesus saying this amazing statement, I am the gate. Let's just have a look at what's happened before this, so it helps us understand what it is he's actually trying to tell the people. Jesus has just healed a blind man. It's the story where the man has been blind from birth, and Jesus comes to him, and he scoops up some dirt, he spits in it, he rubs it together, he rubs it into his eyes and tells him to go and bathe. And when he comes back, he's healed and he's got his eyesight back. And people that have known him for as long as he can remember are going, this surely can't be the same man. This can't be the man that we've known all these years that now can see. And so many of the townsfolk go and they go to the Pharisees and explain with great excitement what it is that's happened. And so the Pharisees pull this man in to fight and question him about, well, who was this man that's done this for you? And so Jesus, in his conversation with his disciples and the Jewish religious authorities, Jesus identifies himself as the gate. And these words, as all the other words, the other different I am sayings, help us to start understand a little bit more about who Jesus is, what he's come to do, and it actually enables us to grow in our relationship with him, to deepen our faith in him and experience more of this amazing life that he offers for us. Sheepfolds weren't much in ancient Israel. They're not really like the ones we see on the ranches in the Wild West movies that you might watch, or up on our own hills if you go on a walk when it's actually a sunny day, like it thankfully it has been today. I mean, the floodgates literally have opened on our nation recently. I think somebody's now wishing they'd close them again. But where we've got them made with very strong walls, as you can see from that picture that's on the screen now, often they were built out on the plains. They were just branches and twigs entwined together with one opening, one entrance in and out. Sometimes they would place branches across, but more often than not, the shepherd himself would be the gate. He would prevent the sheep leaving, particularly at night time, when it was dangerous for them to go out, when wild animals and robbers would be out there lurking, waiting for them, but also so that he could protect them as well. So they're often built of bushes or branches, or even just of low stones, but enough to contain the sheep and keep them from wandering into danger. And often what would happen is several shepherds would bring their flocks together and pen them in one of these area enclosures together, partly to provide each of them with even more safety, but also that the flocks would mingle until the sheep were then separated by the calls of the shepherd. The shepherd had such a close relationship with his sheep that just by a whistle or a call or a click, his sheep would know that it was their shepherd that was calling them, and they would move on at his command. And shepherds knew the sheep of their flocks by name, even maybe having names for them, and the sheep would recognize the voice of their shepherd. So the shepherds would often stand as the gate to the sheepfold. They would lie in front of the opening of the fold so that nothing could enter or leave without them knowing, even in the middle of the night. So these human gates provided entrance to the fold and protection from the threats outside. And what we see in the Bible is that the term flock is often always understood as a symbol of the church and also of the family of God. That whenever God or Jesus speak of the flock, they are talking about those that are in the family of God. And so what Jesus is saying, and the first thing to us to think about tonight, is that Jesus provides the entrance into the family of God. Because of his life, because of his death and resurrection, we ourselves are able to come into a relationship and be part of this flock, of this family, with our brothers and sisters in faith. And it's an incredible flock. It's made up of all different of sheep of all different shapes and sizes and breeds. Just have a look around you. There's some very interesting sheep in this room right now. And we are the most unlikely flock you're probably ever going to find anywhere. But we are united by our common faith, baptism, and mission that comes in and through Jesus. And those alone are stronger than any differences we might find with one another. You know, you might be sitting next to somebody who looks completely different to you. But if the one thing that brings you together is Jesus, then that is more than enough. But there's a warning in the passage, in this passage, that some people attempt to get into this family, to get into all that it offers through other means, through ways other than Jesus, who's the gate. These people have their own agenda. It's not God's agenda. Their goals are more often than not selfish. Sometimes they actually seek to hurt and to harm those in the flock. Those who try to get in by other means than the gate. are actually trying to please themselves and not God, and can often be trying to steal or to lead the flock away for their own gain. So the emphasis of this passage, however, is not a warning necessarily just about the thieves, but it's also a celebration of the entrance into the family of God through the person that is Jesus Christ. Because above all else, he is the gate. So Jesus tells his listeners that those who enter or exit through the gate will be able to go in and out and find pasture. Now, pastures are a place of nourishment that also can provide protection when the flock sticks together. So if we go out through him, there is nothing to fear. If we go out when Jesus, who is the gate, allows us to go out, there is absolutely nothing for us to fear. It's only through him we will find the pasture, the things that he wants to give to us. The danger is when we think we can go out on our own, that we don't need to go out through the gate, we don't need to go through Jesus, that we think we have a good idea or a good plan, and we go out and do it without first going through Jesus, without actually bringing it before him. That can be extremely dangerous. Because Jesus, whenever he sends us out, wants us to find the place of refreshing and resourcing in our lives. That when he allows us to go out, he is the one that sends us. Not because we're good enough, but because he's the one who's calling us and sending us out. So as the family of God, we're led to pasture and we're able to grow in our Christian lives. You may feel that God's calling you to something, and you might be sitting there tonight saying, I can't do it. Good. Because if he's calling you to it, he will provide all that you need in order to do it. He will give you the pasture that you need. If we try and go out in our own strength, we will fail. But when he calls us, he provides what we need in order to make it happen. And you know, for many of us, it's tempting for us to equate this full life that it talks about in this passage of actually thinking of it in this Western world society that we live in, of thinking and making it and actually cheapening it and limiting it by what we see as having a full life means to the rest of the world. Because this full and abundant life that is ours, it comes through Christ. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a life of comfort. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a life of wealth or an abundance of worldly things. When Jesus talks about a full life or living an abundant life, he's referring to the things of God. He's referring to the fact that we will be in relationship with him, that we will know his presence with us, that we will know his power through us. We will know and be held in his steadfast love. And we will know his full and abundant forgiveness for all that has been passed. But we've got to pass through the gate that is Jesus. No matter what our circumstances are, we will know those things if we pass through the gate that is Jesus. But often we are told there is more than one door that we can go through. As you can see on the screen, there are three doors. As I was preparing this, I was trying to think of a little illustration to help get this across. And I came across this very, very cheesy American game show called Let's Make a Deal. And I actually came across a clip, and it was actually from the 1970s. And just because of what the people were wearing, I thought, I cannot show it. So if you want to YouTube it, go away and YouTube it. But there's this couple on this one particular clip. They looked like they'd just taken their living room curtains, cut them out, and he'd made a shirt and she'd made a dress. And they were a lovely couple, but just by that alone, it was like, ugh, hideous. Anyway, the aim of the game is towards the end of the evening, and it's the crazy game show. The host has everybody dressed in fancy dress apart from... In fact, that's probably why they were wearing it, thinking about it. They were probably wearing it because they'd probably gone, fancy dress, curtains. Anyway, the aim of it is everybody in the audience has a $100 bill. And the host comes up to you and says, let's make a deal. And as it gets towards the end of the show, there are three doors. And they get to choose which door they want to go through. And sometimes one of those doors is an amazing prize, just in the prize itself. But then another screen goes back and it's an even bigger, huger prize. And sometimes you walk away with like a block of cheese or something else. Or, you know, less than what your $100 is actually worth. And so I thought, I can't really show it because it's, you know, it's kind of promoting gambling and stuff as well. But also just because of the way the things are. Anyway, we have three doors. There are lots of people in the world that think they can get into heaven or into the flock by picking any one of these doors. I'm going to actually help you a little bit. Who would pick door number one? Thank you, Nathan. Who would pick door number two? Okay. Who would pick door number three? Interesting. Did you pick it because of the colour? Okay. You fell into my hands. No. Okay. So the first door, if you pick door number one, you're going for the religion route. And what religion is that you believe that if you tick the right boxes, you obey the right things, you can do it. In your own power and your own strength, you can get it. So when people say to me, oh, are you religious? I say, to a point, but everybody is. All of us in some way, everyone in the world in some way is religious. We have more religious men in this nation than we would credit for, because every weekend they travel up and down the country. They spend thousands of pounds in all weathers to go and watch 22 men kick a bag of wind. They sing songs, they lift their hands in the air, they worship, they sing all whatever songs they do. They are religious. And when their team fails, it's like they've lost a member of their family. You see grown men crying. You see them break down. What amazed me is I went to Rwanda a couple of years ago, and football is such a religion in Africa. We were having a meal with a guy who worked for YFC in Kenya, and the day before, Arsenal had lost, even worse, I think, than they did against Liverpool the other day. I haven't actually heard the score, how it went on today, but don't tell me. No, you're kidding. Andrew just shook his head at me. Anyway, not that I follow football anyway, but I've got a son at home who thinks Liverpool are amazing. In Nairobi in Kenya, a man had gone out in his Arsenal shirt and hung himself because Arsenal had lost. So people are religious. They may not believe in God, but they are religious. That we, and that the aim of the religion is that you can do it. If you're good enough, if you do the right things, if you collect enough points, you will get in. So that door is a dead end. Door number two is idol worship. You deserve it. Be happy. That in some way, if I'm good, why should bad things happen to me? That I should be able to get what I want if I've worked for it. That in some way, my life is about making the most for me. Or there's something out there that if I get that, that will make me happy until something better comes along or it breaks down. I've got a 12-year-old son whose aim in life at the moment is one day to own a Bugatti Veyron Supersport. It's a very big, very powerful car. And I said, well, how are you going to earn it? He said, because I will be worth it. That's an ongoing discussion in our household. So that, again, is a door that doesn't work. So the green door, in Shaking Stephen terms. Sorry, that's a generational thing, isn't it? The third door is actually the only door. Because Jesus has already done it. All that we need to get into heaven or to live this eternal life has already been done for us 2,000 years ago. Because Jesus came and lived and then he died on a cross to pay the price. And you can sit there and go, oh, well, great. I'll believe in him one day. But what does Jesus say? Jesus says, I've come. I've opened this door so that you can choose whether you're going to walk through that door or not. He's done it all, but the choice is still yours. You have to choose whether you're going to go through that door or that gate. He makes it possible for you to enter into the fold, the flock, the family of God. And he knows your name and he calls you to come. My question to you is, do you recognize his voice when he calls to you? When he says, come in or go out. Do you hear him? How do you answer that call? See, I believe there's a lot of people that want to add Jesus to their life, but still want to walk and choose other doors to go through. And they even expect that Jesus is going to tag along with them. That whatever choices they make, that Jesus will just tag along with them. And I think part of the problem is that our independent spirit tells us that we can do all things ourselves. But if we put God first, then the other things come, but you have to come in through the door of Jesus. Anything else we try to do, whether you try and be religious, you turn your worship into some sort of idol worship, where you start placing things above the person, lead nowhere. Thieves and robbers try using other gateways to get to eternal life in heaven, to try and steal people away from the truth that is Jesus. We can live an abundant and full life right here, right now, if we go through the door that is Jesus. We can live life to the full today, tomorrow, and for all the days of our lives. Don't choose any other door because they are all those dead ends, literally. And Jesus even warned about the other gates. If you look at Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, he says, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. When you go to the airport, as I said before, you have to leave your luggage or your baggage before you go through the gate. You have to say if you've left it with anybody else, or they ask you the question, have you packed it yourself? Gone are the days when, just before 9/11, I went on a trip to the Ukraine, and one of the things they gave me as a gift, I went on a visa team, one of the symbols they have out there is a mace. So basically, I had this wooden carved mace, which was like a big, thick wooden handle about that long. And on the end was this ball of wood with all these spikes sticking out of it. And I thought, there's two ways of getting through the airport with this. I can either try and hide it and disguise it, or carry it down my trouser leg, which could be painful. Or I just get on the plane with it in my hand. This was before 9/11. I carried it onto the flight. Those days have long gone. I would be treated as a terrorist now. Before we go through the gate that is Jesus, we have to leave our baggage behind. We have to leave whatever luggage, whatever we've built up, and just simply come. That means leaving behind our hurts, the difficulties we faced in the past, the problems we've had with other people, the hurts we've had as being part of this church or within our own family, and simply leaving those at the foot of the cross and leaving them with Jesus. If we're going to be and live a full life through Jesus. And for some of us, we find it hard to get through that gate because we carry so much baggage with us and we're afraid to let go of it. Tonight, I want you to know that Jesus wants you to let go. He wants you to place it down and walk into all that he has for you. Because you can't move on until you do. Because as we read, the gate is narrow. Not just because only a few find it, but because we can't fit in with everything else that we're carrying, because Jesus just wants you. He's already dealt with all the baggage. You can't take it in through with you. So what I think this passage teaches us more than anything else is that once we become part of the Good Shepherd's flock, he will protect us and he will feed us and he will give us a life like we could never imagine. And this thought is given in the profound words that sum up and conclude this section in verse 10. That I have come that they, that's you and that's me, may have life and have it to the full. But that it's not just for us. The force of these words of Jesus strike out from here out. That Jesus doesn't just call us in, there are times when he calls us out. Because there's a world out there that needs to hear they can have a full life. They don't have to live by the cheap limitations and imitations of the world. Because only he can give us life in all its fullness. These are things only God can do. So Jesus, as he says, "I am the gate," is actually proclaiming to say that he is everything we need in life. That he's the door to peace. He's the door to righteousness. He is the door to salvation. He is the door to heaven itself. He's the door to a relationship with God the Father. There aren't three doors. There aren't even 43 doors. There is only one door that we should choose that will lead to those things. And Jesus is standing there before the Pharisees and saying, "I'm it. I am the doorway to the Father. The religious practices that you've been harping on about all these years and telling people that they have to fulfill, all that is fulfilled in me, because it's about relationship and not about religion. Because it's about living a life in the fullness of the presence of God by his Holy Spirit for all eternity. And it can start right here today. Jesus is the only gate. He's the gate that makes it possible for you and for me and for everyone else across our city and across this nation and across this whole planet to enter into the family of God. And he knows your name and he knows their name. And he's calling you. Do you recognize his voice? He calls us to be his flock and calls you to go out so others can experience life in all its fullness. Amen.